Well, welcome back to Mostly Hairless Apes. I was hoping to do another suggestion from the Biobel, which I thought of summarizing as do good. I've been trying to figure out how do you get ethics out of science. And when you decide that consciousness is what's driving artificial selection, which is the model I'm working on here, we've got the problem of what is good. From using evolutionary studies to look at human civilization, you would have to say that at the very least, religion is good in the sense of a social adaptation. I look back at thousands of years of history, and most civilizations, in terms of what they defined as good, have been linked into a deity. Now, we have had thousands of deities, but the big monotheisms arose, starting with Christianity and Judaism, the Abrahamic religions, if you will, Judaism to Christianity to Islam, all say that there's one God. And that's, I think, was a huge evolutionary adaptation relative to civilization. So, the hypothesis here is that you can't have a civilization, you can't have a group of humans working together with consciousness, questioning each other, because that's what consciousness does, is it questions things, without having a common belief system. Because you all have to be able to say, okay, I'm good enough with that. Because at some point, you have to be able to stop arguing. And you don't argue about knowledge. People argue about, don't argue about what we know. Common sense, as it were. Peer-reviewed publications in the scientific literature. But when you talk about doing good, in science, that equates to truth. But in religion, it equates to belief. And there's the fundamental divide in society. Obviously, we've had wacky things going on in America. I'm recording this on Tuesday, September 23rd, 2025. And I realize there's been all this hullabaloo about Charlie Kirk. Charlie Kirk, another fellow human trying to do good. That's all any of us are trying to do. I mean, even people, even when you think about it, what some people would describe as evil, what other people describe as good. It's no different than being at war and saying, oh, these are our soldiers versus those terrorists over there, those revolutionaries. Well, we were the revolutionaries 200 plus years ago, 250 years ago. And the British were the good guys, according to them. Everybody's got a relative perspective here. That's the beauty of consciousness and belief. So we've all got to believe in something because you have to fill in your ignorance. No one has absolute knowledge. And so we substitute a belief system for that. Most belief systems end up being religions. But I want to make the case that science is the best belief system because it minimizes belief. Science starts from the assumption that you have to prove things and get evidence and data from observations and experiments. And then you have to come up with an explanation, a hypothesis to try to explain it. And when we hit on a good hypothesis that keeps getting verified, we say, hey, I think this works this way. And as weird as it is, gravity was described for hundreds of years by Newton's equations as an attraction between matter. And Einstein came up with this weird definition that says, no, matter bends space-time. And that's why things collide and fall into each other, because matter bends space-time. But we won't get into that physics. It obviously gets down to this belief of what's the best explanation, what gives you the best math, what gives you the best predictability, because that's the issue. When you have knowledge, you can minimize the variables. And even if you don't have complete knowledge, if you don't have absolutely true information, that you can take a good guess if you know how things work. If you see similar patterns in a process, that's maximizing probabilities in your favor. That's going to be the next strategy we're going to use. But for right now, just doing good becomes the real challenge. Doing good means I have to have a definition of good. And that's why religions have been so popular, I think. Religions have been so good for at defining, hey, here's a really great thing for all of us believers. For everybody who accepts deity X or deity Y, we can say, they have told us that this is a good thing. And if you look at the monotheisms, the whole Judaic, Christianity, Islamic axis, and you go down to the core principles, they tell you to be nice to each other, to take care of each other. And it always revolves around accepting God first, though. You have to honor the God. That's the whole point. You have to have belief and trust in something. Because you can't trust your fellow humans. That's the bottom line. We're sinners. We're evil. Depending on which interpretation you get through which religion. But if you come at it from science, and all science says is we're evolving social primates. We are members of the species Homo sapiens, all 8 billion plus of us. And that's where we can move, actually, to a global society. That's the beautiful thing. Because when you have different belief systems, ultimately you end up asking some questions that can't get answered. Because, by definition, belief is only what's going on in your head. And it's really hard to match up your head with somebody else's. That's why marriages are so tricky. Just having one partner trying to get on the same page. Ask anybody who's been married, and they'll tell you that could be a challenge, much less trying to get 8 billion people on the same page. But people have gotten billions of people on the same page to call themselves Christians or Muslims or Jews or Buddhists or Hinduists, and all of these different things, all of those different adaptations allow those people to do good in their own way. However, when you dig deep, one of the things that's been adapted in most religions is that one of the worst things on the planet is an infidel, is a heretic, is a kafir, I believe is how it's pronounced in Arabic. The heretic, the infidel, the non-believer. Because that's the guy or the gal who pulls back the curtain and says, oh, there's the wizard. Because if you pull back the curtain of religion, there's nothing there. Ultimately, it's a game of shadows. Because nobody can prove that a God exists, much less any specific God. I don't think nobody can prove that any of them exist. We can show that there are unexplainable things out there. Sure, I could do that with science. We don't know what dark matter is or dark energy. We can't quite explain all the things that go on in the universe and down below the level of atoms. But we have these really good explanations that we call theories. And theories are basically the scientific belief system. We have a theory of evolution. We have a theory of cell biology. We have the cell theory. We have electromagnetism theory. We have the theory of gravity. And all of those things describe truths as far as science can tell. And that's the real trick here. If you don't accept science, if you don't accept reality, if you don't accept that your consciousness can actually perceive some aspects of the world in their true form, and that we can do this thing we call science, and we can verify, we can do repeatable experiments, and we can measure things. And when we measure things, if stuff doesn't fit, we throw it out. It's got to match the pattern. It's got to be explainable. If we then, where does that go? Where does that leave us? It leaves us with building spaceships and global communication networks with satellites and high-speed rails and cars and jet planes and internets and computers and broadcast systems and barca loungers and preserved food and medicine and vaccines and all of that stuff that comes out of science because somebody did the frickin' experiments. They didn't just make it up. But what we're dealing with now in America is a religious revival. We've got a bunch of people, unfortunately, who are so deeply embedded in a belief system that says there's got to be magic. There's got to be some magical deity out there taking care of things. And if I just pray to him hard enough And if I'm good enough, according to whatever rules have filtered down through the ages and have been interpreted and reinterpreted and reinterpreted and misinterpreted and altered and mutated and evolved into whatever you think is good, that's why you can go out and do certain things. That's why you think it's okay in some situations, somebody does, to go out and kill people. And that's because we all need a belief system. Doing good ultimately depends on what you believe. Because when you get down to a really hard question, you have to resort to the fundamental answers that you've got. And when you've got knowledge, I have knowledge about biology. I have knowledge that this is how living systems work. And I can tell you there's lots of ways to kill somebody. There's lots of ways to stop living systems from working. And we've mastered that. We've got that down. We've been able to blow people up and shoot people and kill people for ages. We've been spending a lot of time and energy doing that because we've run into these groups. We haven't accepted a single common truth. That these gods that we have all evolved, that we've evolved into different belief systems, tell us lots of different things. But the ultimate good would be for us to succeed, to stay alive. That's all biology gives us. That's the good that science gives us. Because what science teaches us, if you accept the theory of electromagnetism and the theory of gravity and the cell theory and the theory of evolution as basic explanations for how the world works, which gives us all of the amazing technology that we have, and all the medical science we have, that we can fix so many things now, is because we follow these rules that we've come up with about theories, about how the universe works. And if we're right, they lead us to better answers. They lead us to uncovering more information about how life works. And that's the goodness of science. That's where science is good, because science doesn't put up with bullshit. Science, by the process of peer review and replication, will uncover stuff that doesn't work as an explanation. We've had plenty of scientific hypotheses in the past. You know, we used to think there was an ether out in space, and nobody's been able to find that. And so when a theory gets disproven, when evidence shows up to say, hey, there's nothing there, there's nothing we can detect, we don't know what that is. We can't explain it, but we know it's not this. And bottom line is, nobody can give us any good evidence. Actually, if you dig into the literature in biology, there have been several studies done, fairly large ones. There was that one out in Kansas that was anchored around cardiology. That they took about 1,800 patients who were heart patients, divided into three groups. And one was being told that they were being prayed for at the local church, and they actually gave their names to prayer groups at these churches. The other one was told they weren't being prayed for, and the other one was left as the control. They weren't told anything. And the people who actually were told they weren't being prayed for had a better recovery rate because they took the responsibility for their healing on their own. That's the problem with religion, as I see it. That's the problem that science sees, is an evil of religion. And why religion is not as good as science. Because ultimately in religion, you stop thinking. That's been the beauty of religion and why it's been such a successful adaptation for thousands of years. Because for most of our history, most of us didn't have enough information. We finally live in an age where we have lots of information. And we have enough information to explain things like life on Earth and death and medicine and communications and all of this fun technology that we have, and how to fly into space. We know how to do all that because we figured out how the universe works on a small level. We have knowledge in our little corner of the universe that can explain all of those things. Some people can't process that. They still think it's magic. They just leave it to magic, and they accept deities. And so they can go to a tent revival. They can go out to Arizona or wherever and praise the Lord and sing hymns and think it's all going to be better. And in some cases, they can think themselves well, just like the placebo effect in those heart studies. We know there's a placebo effect. We know consciousness is an amazing thing. and we have some understandings of how it works. But if you're not conscious and awake, if you're not woke, if you're not alert, if you're not aware of things, then what are you? Then you're in a daze. Then you're in something less than consciousness, less than awareness. And that's the real problem we have right now. And that's something too, that idea that scientists would look down on people who are religious believers. Because if you're going to stop thinking, we don't have anything to talk about. If we're trying to solve a problem, which requires us to think about it and figure out new answers to things, which is what science does. Artists do it on the emotional side. Artists do it by capturing ideas, information that encompasses more complex issues like emotions and parts of consciousness that we don't understand yet. That's what's beautiful about the arts. The sciences get down to the nitty-gritty, and they reduce it down to fundamental details. So science is trying to look at reality from the top down, from the bottom up of consciousness. How do we build bodies, and how does consciousness arise when it shows up in a one-year-old human as they start to think about stuff? And artists try to come down from humanity. They say, what's in my consciousness? How do I feel about this? What are the emotional inputs that are coming to me, and what information am I processing? And that's where artists give us their creations. And all of it's trying to figure out humanity. But what does religion give us? Religion just says, stop thinking. Here are the rules that God gave us. This is all you need to do. And they work in a lot of cases to temporarily solve a problem, or at least make you less stressed, because they've been adapted and refined over the millennia. The reason we don't have Norse gods or thunder gods anymore, or the pantheons of Rome, is because people said, oh, they must live up on those mountaintops. And then people went to the mountaintops, and there was nobody there. And they said, well, wait a minute. Where are the gods? Where did they go? And when they stopped showing up, and we couldn't find them anywhere, and then we made sky gods. That was the big evolutionary leap that monotheisms did, that the Abrahamic religions did, the Judaism and Christianity and Islam and a bunch of other ones. I'll say, well, they're out there. There's a force in the universe, whatever it is. Star Wars does the same thing. There's just some mystical, magical force. And there might very well be. But here's the deal. It's a really low probability. Because, as anybody will tell you, we can show plenty of examples. The fact that we don't believe in all those other deities, it can be extended to anyone that you actually believe in and say, why should I believe in that one either? If we've thrown away all these other gods over the years, and why should I stop thinking about it? And we've actually, but we've become so cultivated into this. It's part of our civilization. And we have to train our children to do it. And we do it by, unfortunately, lying to them about Santa Claus and things like that. I can't tell you how much I wrestled with Santa Claus and explaining. My youngest daughter believed in Santa for quite some time, to the point where we had to say, all right, no, it's not real. There's not that magic. Because when you think about it, think about being raised in a religious household versus a scientific household. Think about the process of development. Whatever you think about yourself, whether you're a child of God with magical powers of creation, whatever that is, or you're just an evolving social primate, who has this adaptation that we call consciousness. And what consciousness is enough brain power, enough neural networks to be self-aware about your environment. You understand your environment. That's the key thing about awareness. Being woke is being awake and being alert is really just taking in your environment and saying, what's going on around me? What do I have to consider? Is that a smoke alarm going off? What do I have to worry about? What do I have to not worry about? How much time do I have to think? That's your environment. And how do you do good in your environment? You have to define your good. And if you're a religious believer, your good is whatever the priests, the shaman, the rabbis, the imams, whoever they are, tell you is good, whatever the ancient books. But if you're a scientist, you question things. And you say, I don't know what's good. What's good? I don't like pain. That's a nasty thing. Death seems to be pretty bad. Disease is pretty bad. So let's figure out how to stay healthy. And that's one of the things science has worked on for centuries now. We've been trying to figure out nutrition and medical care and developmental training. And education has come along as a formal practice. That's slowly evolving into a science. We're trying to figure out how brains work. And what we've realized is that brains aren't conscious. There's very little evidence that says infants, they're responding to things. Sure, they respond to sounds. They have functional ears. If they can hear, they can feel things. We have lots of sensory neurons in our bodies that interpret the environment for us. And some of us do it differently, which is why some of us might see colors around things that other people don't see. Some people might see auras, because not everybody's vision's the same. Just like there's blind people, there are people with a little extended vision at the other end of the spectrum who can see maybe a few extra colors. Now, we think of both of them as a little weird, you know, as much as however you think about it, and you'd like to help them out if you could. But no, what do? We shoot to the average. We settle to the average, and we take what's there. Because most of us are pretty busy. But if you were a scientist, you might want to solve one of those problems. You might look at people with different types of vision, different sensory perceptions, and realize that we all interpret the world a little different. And what's acceptable is what we all can agree on. And that's all science does. It just says, what can we see? What's the minimal that we can do? What's the baseline? The science builds up from the bottom. And science tells us that consciousness is this evolved adaptation. We've had it probably for hundreds of thousands of years. Other animals might have some variation of it, of self-awareness and the ability to make choices. I think my dog has some degree of consciousness. And since we've brought them along on our evolutionary journey, I feel a little responsibility towards canines, to dogs, that because humans, my fellow species members, have been domesticating them for tens of thousands of years. We think we've had dogs with us for well over 10,000 years, probably close to 20. And those are all choices that have been made. Are they good choices? They're good choices from the scientific perspective, from my belief in science as a belief system, that it keeps us alive. One of the things dogs give us is a way extended olfactory capacity, the ability to smell things. Humans have lousy smellers, which probably was an adaptation to living around a bunch of stinky humans when we were all evolving as pack animals, as social primates. You know, minimizing your offense to smell is probably a good adaptation relative to living with a bunch of other stinky humans. We've come up with perfumes and scents and bathing, but dogs replaced our smellers, our sniffers. Of course, they're a logical adaptation. They're a good adaptation. And that's how we can define good. What improves life? What makes your life better? And we could then have a civil society if we all believed in science instead of religion. And we could say, hey, we're all members of the same species. The only way I can do any good is if I can have some time to stop and think about it. Which means everybody needs a home. Everybody needs a proper education. Everybody needs health care so that you can be as fit as possible. So that you can go out and do good work. That you can change the environment by putting in some labor. Because that's the only way you're going to change anything. We all have to do good. But what is that one thing that's good for you, or those multiple things that are good for you? What are they? I don't know. But you have to decide. That's what science tells us. But we can all do that by living in a civil society. That's what science tells us. Science is a belief system, to me, says doing good is the process of maintaining our species, increasing our genetic variability, keeping genetic options open, keeping as many people alive as possible that can develop their full potential. That means everybody needs a good home, everybody needs good nutrition, everybody needs access to education, so that we can all grow up and make our own decisions. As far as religion goes, it's been a great adaptation, but I think it's at a point where it's just harming us, because it doesn't allow us to talk. You can't talk to people. Trying to talk to a religious zealot is amazingly frustrating, because they've been programmed to deny anything that challenges their belief. Now, any good preacher nowadays tells you, oh, you have to believe. You can't listen to those heathens out there. They're telling you that this isn't real. But it is. I know it is. The only thing I know that's real is what I can see, what I can touch, what I can feel. You know, based on evidence from historical relationships. I'm pretty sure my wife loves me, and I'll accept that as knowledge because she's stuck it out for 42 years with me. So she must love me to some extent. But love is an emotion. Love's an internal state. I love her, and it may be the exact same thing that she says that loves me, but the point is, we'll never know. Science has yet to get into anybody's brain. We can look at electrical patterns, we can measure hormone levels, and we can correlate things, but we haven't figured out those emotions yet. But emotions are just that. They're biological input to our minds, and they combine with whatever we know as knowledge that we've learned from experience and education. And we put those together to make decisions to do good. But what have we been taught? Well, a lot of us have been taught from day one, there's some magical deity out there. Oh, there's one called Santa Claus, there's one called the Easter Bunny, and there's one called Jesus or Allah or Buddha or whoever. And because we've built our brains with that developmental pattern, with that information, that just says, oh yeah, there's stuff that's out there that's magic that can alter your life, then we believe in voodoo, we believe in all sorts of curses and things like that, and not appreciating that there's limits to things. There's limits to how much people can affect each other. Now, obviously, I can just do things with weaponry and do things with various technology, but on a personal level, I'm only dealing with who's ever here. If there's nobody here, then it's just me. And I'm doing good involves me making a decision about what's good. And it's getting work done. Getting things like putting out this podcast, which apparently nobody listens to, but I'm okay with that. Because this is me venting. This is me getting my brain on straight. As I'm a retired teacher, but I do have acquired enough information, I think, to have this hypothesis. That civilization is based on people sharing a belief. And if we don't share a belief in reality, then we're doomed. We're going to have so much trouble. Because ultimately, if you accept bullshit, which is ultimately what religion, because if there's no God out there, then all science says is there probably isn't. Because there's no evidence that there is. There's no evidence. I don't care what you say. People can pull up all the books they want. But there's no evidence, there's no good evidence that any magical deities exist, that anybody can change the laws of physics and chemistry. Now, as far as biology goes, we're still working on that. Whatever the placebo effect is, or the nocebo effect too, when you have positive and negative psychological effects, that's an area for exploration. Whatever magic works in consciousness, whatever we don't understand about consciousness that can influence the rest of our body, that's something that needs work. And whether you get there through Zen meditation or some prayer-like attitude or some scientific investigations or yoga or whatever, all of it allows us to get our brains on straight. And all you can think about, though, is what we should think about is how do we keep humanity alive? How do we preserve the species? How do we make the species better? How do we guarantee, well, we can't guarantee it, but we don't go extinct? How do we try not to go to extinct? How do we do that? Well, I think that means we need to manage the planet. We need to share a little better. We need to stop polluting. We need to stop killing each other. It's pretty basic. That's all I think the Church of Science teaches us. If I have a belief system in science, doing good for me means gardenifying the planet. You know, stopping with that. And the first step is actually getting rid of the billionaires. We'll talk about that in the next episode. But that's going to be doing good for me. Staying alive, keeping as many people and other species alive as I can, letting the natural world go about. And we should be observing it and figuring it out and trying to understand what the rules are about reality instead of wasting our time worrying about mystical things that we can't prove that even exist. It's hopefully you stay dry on this rainy Tuesday here in Georgia, and I'm signing off.